Joining us to discuss the impact of the pandemic on frontline workers are two doctors from the UK's National Health Service, also known as NHS. Dr. Mina Viz and Dr. Dan Goyo. Thank you both for joining me on Upfront. Dr. Viz, I'm going to start with you. In the UK, there has been a mass exodus of healthcare workers in the NHS. Over 27,000 staff left from July to September in 2021. That's the most in any quarter on record. The Deputy Council Chair of the British Medical Association says doctors are leaving, quote, due to punishing workloads, stress, exhaustion, and sadly, verbal and physical abuse. Can you describe the toll that this is taking on healthcare workers?
Sure. I think that when we look at the NHS, we have to ask ourselves the question that why is it that so many people have made the decision to leave the system and to leave the work that they love so much? You have to remember that all of these healthcare workers sacrifice a lot of their own life to be on the line to protect the British public. So why is it now that they've decided to leave the job? And I really feel that all of the stress and all of this fatigue, these are all just outcomes of a system that seems to be running purely on goodwill. And I know that during the pandemic, you know, the NHS was faced with one of its biggest crises in its history. But a lot of us stayed away from our loved ones. A lot of us worked through the night. A lot of us worked overtime. Yet what we asked from the government, we weren't getting. So the very people who were on the line saving the British public, who weren't protected, who weren't taken care of, what else do you expect from them 2 years on?
Wow. Dr. Goyo, can you describe what you and your colleagues have personally experienced as healthcare workers throughout the pandemic?
Yes, Mark. You can think back to February 2020 when we were witnessing this SARS virus spreading around the globe with, at that time, a 10% mortality rate, with the knowledge that it had killed the very young doctor that had discovered it. And there we were getting ready to face it in very flimsy PPE, terrifying, really. It was a scary time. And then the wave hit, and so many patients, so many people not making it, family members not able to see them, us ourselves not knowing if we were safe, if we were going to catch it or pass it to our family and loved ones. It was really a very traumatic time. And then, Mark, you add to that the lack of good PPE, as exactly as Manel said, expecting goodwill but not actually giving us anything to protect ourselves with. That took a toll on us. And now we're in this situation 2 years on where the NHS is so overwhelmed, care has been so rationed to the British public that we now can't provide care at the standard that we normally would. And from what I'm hearing from my colleagues leaving, that's one of the biggest reasons. I trained to this level to deliver this level of care, and the NHS and the government are not providing me with the equipment, the space, the resources to do that. And I'm sorry, I'm just not willing to keep sacrificing that.
Dr. Viz, I definitely want you to jump in on this point as well, because you actually staged a silent protest outside of 10 Downing Street, of course, the official residence of the Prime Minister, demanding better protection for healthcare workers. You even called for legal action over the government's lack of guidance on safety protocols and rights to PPE, personal protective equipment. What led you to that point?
Well, at this time, Mark, I was about six months pregnant, and the last thing I wanted to do was go out and protest. I had a baby inside me, and I had to take care of my health, and I had to take care of my family. The last thing I wanted to do was go out and protest, and I really didn't have the energy to take the government to court. But I was in a situation where I was begging for a mask in my hospital. I was begging for equipment to protect myself, because I wasn't just afraid about my life, but I was obviously afraid of the life of my unborn child as well. So when I was in this situation, I was left with no other choice, because I wasn't being protected. But at the same time, we were seeing ethnic minority groups being disproportionately affected as well. And when we asked for answers, when we were asking questions, why is it that these policies are changing without rhyme or reason? How is it that we're wearing a hazmat suit one day and the next day we're wearing a dinner lady's apron? It made no sense whatsoever. So the fact that we weren't getting what we asked for as scientists, when we know what we're talking about, we understand how infection spread, and our managers telling us to stay quiet, our managers silencing us and threatening us if we did go to the media, it left me with no other choice.
But let me ask you, what do you think is the motivation? It can't be that they actually want harm to come upon you, right? Is it indifference? Is it a lack of care? What is it that leads you to be a frontline worker that the state needs that doesn't get the most basic protections?
I personally think it's a lack of preparedness. And that is a one issue that we've had over the last couple of years, that despite having this knowledge and despite having the best scientists on board to tell us what's going to happen, to help us predict what the future looks like, they're not being listened to. Our government and our ministers seem to be having different priorities during that time. I mean, we spend billions and billions of pounds on a test and trace system. It was given to a company which had no idea what they were doing. We had billions of pounds lost in PPE contracts, yet we were still begging for protection on the shop floor. It made no sense. One thing didn't work with the other. So I think the lack of preparedness, the lack of willingness to learn from scientists and to actually be held accountable, I think is the biggest problem.
Oh, no, you want to jump in on that point. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with Minal. I mean, I would say it was indifference. I think our political leadership have, really failed here, really quite dramatically. The lack of preparedness, as Minal said, but also I think their priorities were very skewed. A lot of money and resources went into private sector, industry sectors, and very little resource there to strengthen the NHS. And I think there's big questions there. Why wouldn't you strengthen your only line of defence against a deadly pandemic? And, you know, we were all screaming, as Minal said. Minal took to the streets to protest. And yet, you know, we were one of the worst performers in the world. We lost so many. And I think this was a lack of care and attention for the British public. And I certainly think it was a very stark difference in priorities. Mm-hmm.
I also want to talk to you, Dr. Goyal, about the conditions before the pandemic. Burnout and mental strain were high even before this global crisis. Nearly a third of doctors who responded to a survey published in the British Medical Journal in January of 2020 described that they were facing a high burnout, and about 26% had high secondary traumatic stress. Can you pinpoint when this mental health crisis among doctors and other healthcare workers actually began?
I don't know if I can be specific in a time, but certainly the NHS has always run hot for the 20 years that I've known it. We've always been busy. We've always been up against it. I think the difference then was it felt like leadership was with you and would be responsive to those demands. At the moment, and I'd say probably for the last 10 years, it's been we've raised those concerns. Look, it's too dangerous. It's too much demands and not enough of us there to do it. And this is the time when they've not been responding to that, probably over the last 10 years. We have been defunded. A lot of our money has went away from the front line and to private providers. I think there is a sense that this government does want to change the way healthcare is delivered in the UK. And that's fine. We can have an open debate about that. We can discuss that. But it seems like a lot of that has been done perhaps not very upfront about it, really.
Minal, would you share that assessment that sort of pre-pandemic you were wrestling with these very same conditions and that you and your colleagues were struggling with high levels of stress and burnout and other factors?
Sure. I think over the last few years, I've been seeing very similar situation to what Dr. Dan has just explained. And I think that when we were raising the alarm bells, especially in the pandemic, especially during a time where not only were we seeing the British public suffer, but we were seeing our own colleagues suffer. We were seeing our own colleagues in ITU beds. We were seeing our own colleagues on ventilators. Mm. So I think the fact that if the politicians don't listen to us at such an acute time when we're in such high levels of distress, I really think it's a shame on British politics.
Dr. Goyal, there are currently more than 6 million people on the wait list for hospital treatment in England. That's the highest it's ever been. How did hospitals get to this point?
Yes, I mean, it's an unbelievable number. I mean, almost unfathomable, 6 million people. There was already 4.5 million before the pandemic started. And you look at cancer waiting lists, they're the worst they've ever been. I mean, you know, to say that this NHS has been severely neglected over the last 10 years is an understatement. You know, there is no will from our leaders to invest properly in the NHS and in the front line. And that means there is no will to protect the people. You know, can you imagine, you know, waiting 2 months to get treated for cancer? I mean, there's 4,000 people every month having to wait 2 months just to be treated for cancer. I mean, I think, you know, it's time to call it out and say that, you know, this government is failing, has failed to provide healthcare. We can't even provide urgent care now, the longest 12-hour waits in A&E history. You know, it's really getting quite poor. And I think it's exactly what you pointed to, Mark, exactly what Minel said. It's a lack of priorities, and it seems to be an indifference to the health and safety of the public.
Dr. Viz, some would say that's reflected in the not just lack of investment, but the actual divestment from public health. The public health grant has been cut by nearly a quarter since 2015 under the project of austerity. What impact has that kind of austerity had on the NHS?
Well, it just continues to have the impact that we're talking about in terms of the mental stress and the fatigue. And we don't have enough doctors on the floor to deal with all of these patients. And imagine if you're a doctor in a busy shift and patients are complaining, the system is crumbling right before your eyes. It just makes you wonder, why are you actually doing all of this? It just makes you wonder that everything that you worked hard for to be in that position as a doctor, to serve the public, to serve the community, as doctors and as healthcare workers, it has a huge personal impact. And I've seen it with my own eyes. As we go back into work, as we start to lift restrictions and people feel like their lives are going back to normal, the messaging from the government is so different to what really is happening around the world and what really is happening with the virus. It really frustrates us, Mark, because we know that that's not the reality, but the messaging that's going through to the British public is completely different. And ultimately, the impact that it's having is coming down straight to us as healthcare workers in the NHS.
That's absolutely right, Mark, if I can. I mean, you know, you have to think, we have families, we have a life. You know, I've got kids, Minal's got kids, and you come home exhausted, traumatised, not able to engage them in their homework or go to their school play or to be there with them. You know, my biggest complaint from my wife is that, you know, you're here, but you're not really here, are you? And you know, why are we continuing to take that? I would continue to take it if they put a solution on the table that was saying, look, in the future, we will have some solutions here. Here we go. We're going to run and we're going to fix it. What the opposite is happening, actually, and that is, actually, we're not going to put any money into you guys. We're going to continue to put it into the private sector. So, as Manal says, why should we stay for that? We're only human.
And I'd just like to add to that, Mark, as well. Sorry, my last point was that you mentioned the legal case that we had. And at that time, I remember we had about 20 or 30 healthcare workers who died because of the virus. And that's when we started a legal challenge because we couldn't see those numbers go up. I mean, one healthcare worker dying was enough for us. But the fact that it took the government 8 months to get back to us, this back and forth of trying to figure out what we can do to change the policies and to change the law on the guidelines around PPE, it took them 8 months. And in that time, hundreds of healthcare workers had died. So it just goes back to my point of saying that why is it that the politicians don't have the same priorities as we do?
Dr. Viz, how should the state have responded to the pandemic? What could have been done differently?
Well, there could have been many things that have been done differently, Mark. And I know that now they're talking about a COVID inquiry. And now 2 years on, you're just sitting and thinking, well, do people actually remember what happened 2 years ago? Obviously, 2 years ago, I remember what happened. Dan remembers what happened. But the British public will move on with their lives and the whole world will move on with their lives. This COVID inquiry now, as we've seen with everything else that's happened, with the parties held at Downing Street, with Dominic Cummings going to Bernard Castle, all of these things, they ultimately get away with it. And that's a very, very frustrating thing, because as doctors, we do everything we possibly can to save the lives of our patients. We make sure that we don't break any rules. We make sure that we stick to our GMC guidelines, and we carry out all our duties as a doctor, because if we don't, we know that we can get into trouble. But why is it that our leaders don't have that same feeling? Why is it that our leaders don't get in any trouble at all? And this is why we held a legal challenge, because nobody was being held accountable. And that's all we want. We want our ministers to stand up and say, look, we've made a mistake, and this is what we're doing to learn from it. But instead, they're coming up on the media, being trained by people to create lies and to try and negate all the questions that are being asked.
Dr. Goyal, Dr. Viz, thank you so much for joining me on Upfront.